Hi, I'm Willie Miller.
Hi, I'm Seb Coe.
I'm Kevin Beckham.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Magnew.
Hi, it's Grant Haggerty.
Hi, I'm Sharon Spoon from the Wallaroo.
I'm Azuma Nelson.
I'm Gashelin, and you're listening to Not the Footish.
Yep.
Yes, you are indeed listening to another podcast of Not the Footy Show. This is our 51st podcast, and of course we had well over 400 shows on 990 Information Radio. So we're getting up to the 500 show mark. So we're doing pretty well, and we hope you're enjoying the show as much as you were in the early days. But we've got a great show lined up for you tonight, as usual. Two topics under discussion, and then we're catching up with a very special 16-year-old who recently won the National Under-19's 60-kilogram boxing championships. Just 16 years of age, yes, and he won the Under-19's championship, and that is Fikadu Kiros. And I think you'll find he's an interesting story to tell and a name to remember, because I think this boy could go a very, very long way. Anyway, I'm Ashley Morrison.
And I'm John Lee. And I'm looking forward to our 500th birthday party. Are we going to have one of those?
Well, we had a 400th, didn't we? So I don't see why not.
Oh, look out for that invitation.
Well, we will. We'll have to do something, definitely.
Yeah, that's a big milestone.
I think we're at something like 470-something. Yeah, I think we did 420-odd shows, and this is now 51st. So whether we get to the 500 this year, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, might be this year. Good to see you again, Ashley.
Always good to be here. You starting us off today?
I will, because it's come through this morning of this podcast as we record that the television landscape for sport in this country is changing. The first hints of it were a few weeks ago when Channel 9 announced they'd pinched the tennis from Channel 7. I think it was a day after the Australian Open they've got announced, or not very short after the Australian Open, it was announced that Channel 9 will be taking on the tennis, and today we find out Channel 7's going to take on the cricket. First time in more than 40 years, cricket will not be seen on Channel 9. And it's an interesting deal because Channel 10's cut out of the deal as well. The former broadcaster of the Big Bash, it's now going to be taken over by Foxtel and Channel 7. Domestic one-day 50-over, not domestic, international 50-over games and international 2020 games will now be seen via Foxtel, so there'll be a paywall there if you want to watch your 50 overs in international T20s, and they'll be sharing, they'll be simulcast on both Foxtel and on Channel 7. I'm not sure if that'll mean there'll be Foxtel commentators or whether it'll be the same feed, but that's how it's looking at the moment.
And I would think that would be the case, because if you think it just is going to be a massive money saver if they share their commentators rather than having independent commentators. But as you say, we'll have to wait and see. I think the deal, knowing from working in television, one of the things that you have at the moment is a major issue with a lot of these TV stations that are obviously pay TV, is they've created now, and if you talk to some of the people that are ahead of these stations, they've created too many channels. So what they've got, John, is a problem where they've got to fill the content. And it, rather than having the Queen coming on, or sorry, the national anthem at midnight, which you and I would remember growing up when the TV finished at the end of the day, now these stations go 24 hours a day. So they've got to find content. And of course, cricket would fit the bill perfectly because it's such a long game. There's also so many games going on around the world as well as in Australia that they will now fill a massive amount of the content on at least one or two of those channels.
Oh, we're not yet to find out whether the content's going to spill back the other way to Channel 7, because Foxtel now currently broadcasts a whole lot of cricket that we don't get free-to-air here. All of the overseas tests and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, which I must admit I dip into occasionally.
Yeah. I wonder if that means we're going to get some sort of reciprocal rights for Channel 7 users, whether they'll start taking some of these overseas tests, especially, as you say, at night, instead of buying the latest Thermomix, although apparently you don't want to buy one of those, but instead of all that home shopping stuff that goes on across two or three channels at the same time, maybe now they'll be able to use some of that overseas content.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I mean, obviously they've paid a lot of money for that, and the
well,
thing... You know?
That's interesting. Look, I'm going off the story that comes from the ABC website. So Evan West has confirmed it has won the bidding war for Cricket Australia's television rights. Now, according to the ABC, they'll take over for the summer of 2018-19, as well as the Big Bash League. The contracts are being finalised, not yet signed. A full announcement will be made this afternoon, so it's probably happening now. Now, the media speculation has valued the bid at more than $1 billion for the rights to host the Test and the Big Bash League. According to the ABC News Corp, Telstra-owned Foxtel is dipping $100 million a year and Channel 7 about $80 million a year. Now, there's nothing on here about how long that deal's for, but from those figures, you'd imagine that's about a five-year deal.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I think it was 4 or 5 year deal. And it was interesting because I heard somebody from the finance side was saying how Channel 7's shares they thought would actually suddenly bounce up. But, of course, Channel 7's in a bit of financial trouble as it is at the moment, and they were going, they don't know how they're going to make this pay, because if those figures are correct, you're going to have to sell a heck of a lot of advertising at premium rates during the cricket to get that back. Now, this particular financial expert was saying he doesn't believe that they can do that, so he doesn't know how 7 are going to make this work. So it's going to be very interesting. I think the thing I feel sorry for in a way, and not that I watch any of the Big Bash, I've never watched a Big Bash game yet. Haven't watched a T20 game.
Oh, have you?
No, don't like. It's, you know, okay, I'm a traditionalist.
I get it.
I just can't do it. And I'm getting sick of music being played constantly when you go and watch sport. But I believe Channel 10 did a great job. From what everybody says is that they really were the ones who built the Big Bash over here. And not only that, they gave the women's Big Bash airtime as well and really have elevated the women's game. So I feel a little bit sorry for Channel 10 that they've now been sort of gazumped and are completely out of the picture. But what you'll probably see is a lot of their commentators may well move across.
I think if you're Channel 7, you'd be looking at the model that Channel 10 had and begun, we'll go along the lines with something like that. Now, who knows how contracted particular people are to particular networks and stuff as far as whether commentators move across. Some of the stuff I've heard out of Melbourne this morning has been interesting. A lot of people glad that it's left Channel 9, and one of the things they're glad for is they think they'll get a new set of commentators. Now, you know, wait and see how those discussions turn out.
Well, I mean, there have been in recent years, haven't there, a lot of articles criticising Channel 9 for their particular commentary and the brand or the people that they've got. I think they've actually had some very good people on there as well. There's some, and that's what sport's all about. It's like you don't like some players, you don't like some commentators. Yeah. Some commentators you love, and the ones I like, you may not like. And we like and dislike them for different reasons.
Ian Chappell's the one that always gets me, because I like Ian's commentary. I don't know, I don't see a problem with it, but a lot of people don't like it.
Well, I must admit, I never liked him as a captain when I was growing up in England, because he seemed
so...
That's
English.
Yeah, exactly. But having met the man, having interviewed him on this show, and having listened to him doing the cricket commentary, I have to say I like him, because I like people like him that have an opinion, that don't sit on the fence, that they're quite happy to air that opinion, even if it flies in the face of their fellow commentators. And also, I think he brings in the past and his history and his knowledge of the game when it's relevant to say, look, you know, we did this in this situation, or I'd be doing this if I was the captain. And those are the things I enjoy from a commentator, and that's why I'm like you. I actually like Ian Chappell.
Back to the broadcast rights deal, though. What sort of impacts do you think this... You know, what's this telling us about the Australian sports landscape and the money that's involved here? I mean, $1 billion for 5 years, $250 million a year for a sport like cricket, and if we have a national sport, that would be the one. Cricket, especially with lower tier sports, you know, where's the money coming for sports that aren't NFL or NRL, AFL or cricket? Where are they going to get their money? Because there's $3 billion tied up in three sports.
Well, I think, John, and it's something you and I have touched on in previous discussions, what I would like to see now is, and I don't know if cricket gets money from the government or the Australian Sports Commission or whatever, but to
they
me,
shouldn't.
You've got that. Yeah, you've got that deal. There is no money anymore.
Yeah.
You now self-funding completely on your own, and that money that, if there was any, that goes to cricket, because certainly this money goes to AFL or the sport we don't mention on this show.
And the NRL, they get government.
Yeah, they get money, and football. You know, let's be honest, the Football Federation of Australia, in my opinion, have had way too much money, and the government should not be giving them handouts anymore. I mean, I think it was $125 million they've been given.
If your sport can afford to pay people hundreds of thousands of euros a week, it doesn't need the government dipping in. And I'm sorry if you feel that you're outside of that economic model. It's about time you got onto the people behind soccer and got them to change the model they're working
behind. But also, you look at it and you go, okay, all the money from the Fox deal, or a large percentage of it, goes to the A-League clubs. But hang on a sec. You, as an A-League club owner, opted to buy that club. It's your business. Make it viable. It's up to you to make it viable. Make it work. I don't see why the government should be having to prop it up.
Not at all.
This is the same with cricket. I think that's the answer, is until the government or the Australian Sports Commission, and even, let's be honest, locally, the Department of Sport and Recreation, turns around and says, now, sorry, your governing body just got this deal. You're going to have to go and see them now about money, because we're going to invest it in, as you say, the second tier sports, or even the third tier sports.
Fourth, fifth tier.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's try and build up that, because, again, we need to be having people playing sport, and there's limited opportunities. But in those others, the more sports we have that are viable and can play and can promote, then more people are going to be active.
You know, one thing that comes out of talking to coaches in this country is that the best players come from a multi-sport discipline, and they're not forced at 12 or 13 to pick a path. They're given the ability to grow and develop as a sports person and take on all of these other skills that they're then able to use in the sport that they choose to play eventually.
Well, there was a brilliant article, I think it was with the Washington Post, with Steph Curry, the basketballer, and he was saying exactly that. He didn't start specialising in basketball, I think, until he was around about 15. And they were saying in this article again, or it was one that was maybe connected to it, where they actually used the article, the interview that he gave, and it was saying exactly what you're saying there, John, is that you may be outstanding, say you may be an outstanding hockey player, but then you may decide to go and play something else where you're not as outstanding. So what you also learn as a child is where is you're really good, and you might get frustrated with those players around you because they're not as good as you and they don't see the plays the way you see it or as early as you see it. When you play another sport and you're not the best, then suddenly you realise how it feels to be those other players. And so you learn those skills to actually cajole them, to urge them to get into position, or and you learn your communication. And some of it isn't even actually verbal communication. It's a physical communication with those around you. So I agree with you, and I think that's a really, really important point.
Just quietly, while we were talking about television earlier, really interesting piece came up this morning from Robert Craddock at the Courier Mail, on one of the websites there for whoever that publisher happens to be. It's about the television coverage of the hockey and the fixturing of the hockey at the Commonwealth Games. Last night we saw Australia play their semi-final at 9 p.m. The same will be going on for the Kookaburras tonight when they play England. That game's going to be on at 9:45 p.m. Now, Robert's written an article, basically, the last line of it, it is nothing less than a crude insult to team flag bearer Mark Knowles, who is retiring after this tournament. He says that in relation to the times that the Kookaburras and the Hockey Roos have been forced to play what you could call showpiece games, and it's after most people are going to be heading off towards bedtime. Certainly, kiddies will be, you know, the ones that you want watching will be going to bed.
Well, if you look at it, the thing that's interesting about it, I mean, what's happened is they're running it the way they run normal tournaments. That's just the way it goes. So you've got the other lower place games are being played earlier in the day, and then you build up to the semi-finals. But you're absolutely right. Why not play the semi-finals? But then the problem you have, of course, is the rest period that players have to have. They're meant to have a 24-hour before they play, or I think it's 18 hours or something between games is the minimum.
That's fairly flexible when you see the way things have done at the Asian Cup, etc.
Absolutely, yeah, that's another story in itself. But look, I've been watching it. I paid for Channel 7's premium app, and I must admit,
bad luck.
Oh man, I've been watching as many of the hockey games as I have. I did watch for 2 days. I watched every single game. But I tell you what annoys me is that if I'm paying for that on my app, I don't want you giving me ads saying get the premium thing. I've already purchased that and I'm getting adverts for it. And then we had a game the other night. I can't remember who was playing. I think it was the Hockey Roos. 5 minutes to go. The game is really in the balance. They ran an ad with 5 minutes to go. Not one ad. I had to sit through six advertisements during the game, and I'm going, there is 5 minutes left. I do not want six advertisements at this point in the game.
And you paid to watch the game. You haven't paid to watch adverts, have you?
No.
That is one thing that irritates me about paid television providing, is don't put an advertisement in, mate. I've paid to see this event. I haven't paid to watch your advertising. If you want to charge me for watching your advertising, well, I'm not paying for the service.
And I've got to say, John, and it not just, I'm not aiming this at any particular sport, but some of the commentators, and I know that some of the sports are going out on a world feed. Please stop being so parochial. You know, it's like there are more than one team competing. There is more than one athlete competing. You know, it is the games, and it's about all of the athletes. And I just get so frustrated when we constantly have just all of the attention is on the Australian athlete, and that's it. And it, I mean, look, I've lived here 30 years. I'm an Australian. I love to see Australia doing well in sport, but I love sport. And therefore, I want to celebrate the other athletes from other countries who are outstanding as well.
G'day, it's Gary Shannon with great news. The people who brought all the good times and fun at Gobbles, Bracket Club, the Post Office, Beethoven's, Finocchio's and more are back. Introducing Late Night Legends. Join DJs Les Cook and Crazy Craig, plus other legends this Saturday night. Fire up and let the good times roll. I might even pop in and have a couple myself. Late Night Legends this Saturday, 7 p.m. till late at Paddy Maguire's, Barker Road, Subiaco. Tell them Gaz sent you.
Hi, I'm Seb Coe, and you're listening to Not The Footy Show.
Yes, you are indeed listening to the podcast of Not The Footy Show. And it's time to turn our attention now to our guest on this podcast, a man who I believe has a very exciting future ahead of him. I'm going to give you a little bit of background about him. Now, Fikadu Kiros arrived in Australia as a refugee 7 years ago from Sudan, where he lived in a rural community. Now, not surprisingly, he struggled with life in this new country as he didn't speak English, and of course our normal life was very alien to him. In 2012, aged 10, he went missing after refusing to board the school bus. School was very hard for him as he could not read or write, didn't speak English, and as has now been discovered, was actually suffering from dyslexia. He ended up skipping school, started sleeping on the streets, and he admits he did things he's not proud of. In 2015, though, his life changed. He was very fortunate that the then WA Commissioner of Police, Carlo Callaghan, and his wife took him in after he was brought in by the police, and they gave him a roof over his head. Now, he was given a place at LaSalle School, where he struggled academically but suddenly started to excel at sport. He was an outstanding runner, and his football skills brought him to the attention of Perth Glory. He became a part of their youth program, but despite having exceptional skills, struggled with the strategic aspects of the game and also understanding what the coach was trying to communicate. It was suggested by Mr. O'Callaghan that he try a sport that was maybe a little bit more individual, like boxing or running. And he tried both, but it was boxing that he found a place where he belongs. And with the guidance of his trainer Dan Rogers from Ring Fit in Burswood, he is climbing the ladder very, very fast, and at 16 years of age, he's just won the National Under-19's 60-kilogram weight division. I was lucky to catch up with Fikadu after training. Fikadu Kiros, welcome to Not The Footy Show.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going very well. Now, it's going very well for you because you just won the Under-19 National Boxing Championships, and you're only 16 years of age, so really good achievement.
Yeah, really good.
I mean, did you expect to win the title? I mean, obviously you would have wanted to, but being so young, did you expect to win it?
Yeah, it was my dream to win the national. So, yeah, I worked so hard for it to win. So I never came there to lose. I came there to win. So, yeah.
Now, you've only been in Australia 7 years. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you came to Australia? Because I believe you were born in Ethiopia.
Yeah, I was born in Ethiopia, but my family came to Sudan. I was born in Sudan, and then I came in as a refugee. And then I got into boxing, and then Carl Callaghan took me to boxing, and then he introduced me to it, and then since then I just love it, yeah.
And did you come with your family?
Yeah, with my mom and my brother.
And how difficult was it, because I presume you didn't speak English when you came to Australia?
Yeah, it was really, really difficult. I was struggling a lot, yeah.
And was school difficult as well? Because obviously you had to go to school and you don't speak English and you had no friends. I presume that would have been very hard.
Yes, I was struggling a lot with school, and then, yeah, I can't struggle that out there.
And is that where sport has actually helped you? So, I mean, being able to play sport and run, did you feel then you could become Furcado and show people who you were?
Yeah, the only way for me to be something is sport. I love boxing, I love sport, and then, yeah. And then I used to play soccer, Perth Glory, and then since then Perth Glory wasn't working out, and then boxing just changed my life. Since then I just love boxing, love growing, training every day, yeah.
Had you seen boxing when you were growing up back home, or was it only when you came to Australia you became aware of it?
Only when I came to Australia.
And have you had any heroes that you look up to in the boxing world?
Oh, yeah, Muhammad Ali.
Have you got a little bit of Muhammad Ali? I've not seen the Ali shuffle from you yet.
I did it in the National. I did it in the National, yeah.
How did that go down?
Yeah, I did it good, yeah.
And I mean, what is it you like about Muhammad Ali?
Oh, he inspired me a lot, you know, the way he talked about boxing, about respect, and he got good heart, and that inspired me to keep going. And he's always honest, you know, he always put people wrong, and that's what inspired me. I like proving people wrong. And he always, when he lose one, he always prove back, so that's why Muhammad Ali inspired me a lot because of that. And that make me work harder.
The thing I find interesting as well is obviously you have African roots, and you find most African athletes have the same as Muhammad Ali, that humility as well, that they respect their opponent and they're not a loudmouth.
Yeah, I agree with that. I have a little humbleness. I talk too much sometimes, but you know, sometimes you got to watch your mouth. So yeah.
Now, obviously you got into boxing. It's one thing to sort of love boxing, to train, but to actually achieve what you've achieved, as I said, to be a champion at 16 in the Nationals, how much work have you put in?
Oh, I put in a lot of work, but I wouldn't have done it without my coach, Dan. So he always take care of me like his son. He always pushed me. He always taught me discipline, and he always, you know, pushed me. He always pushed me every day. And then, yeah, without him, I wouldn't do it. So, yeah.
How hard do you train? Is it one session a day, two sessions a day?
I train, I think, 8 days? 2 times a day, every day.
And for how long each day?
2 hours or 1 hour? Yeah, 2 hours.
Yeah, 1 hour in the morning.
1 hour in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon.
That's a big commitment to someone so young. Again, do you feel that you are setting an example to other people?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I'm the hardest worker in my division anyway. I'll train it more than anybody else in my division. I work more harder than, because I want it so bad and I want to keep going. So hard work isn't going to pay off a lot.
What do you want? Is it an Olympic medal, or is it you want to turn professional one day, or what are your goals?
My goal is to be Olympic champion and then after that turn pro. And then I want to be the first Ethiopian to win Olympic medal for Australia. So that's my dream. But yeah, but when you have that dream, you have to work hard. You can't just talk about it and then don't do it. It's better just train every day and just live out your dream and just keep climbing, and one day you get there. So that's what I'm trying to do.
The Olympics, obviously there's one Olympics in 2 years. Is that too soon? Are you looking more to Paris in 2024?
Maybe. I just got to keep training. It doesn't matter. Maybe the next Olympic, maybe this Olympic, I just got to keep training. My day will come, but it's all about passion. So when my day comes, it's my time. So, yeah.
And also, we've had obviously the Commonwealth Games at the moment, have just, you know, coming at the moment. Do you again want to win a Commonwealth gold?
Oh, I love to win Commonwealth gold. That's my dream too. You win that, and after that, Olympic champion. After that, easy. After that, you can just change your life. I can just help my family, get a beautiful house with a pool. Yeah, that's all my goal.
How important is it to you to help your family?
Oh, most important. My family is a lot to me because we've been struggling a lot. Mom struggled. Mom doesn't go to, she doesn't go to school. She just, you know, she always take care of us, make us food, and that's all she does for us. So that's what inspired me, you know. I'm the only one that have to work hard for my family. That's the only, if I don't work hard, where am I going to take my family? Who's going to feed my family? So it's better for me to just train and box to make me hungry, and then that's the only way.
I believe you grew up in the country in Sudan. And again, it must be very different here. Do you feel that now you have an opportunity to give everyone a better life?
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is, everybody have a chance. But, you know, when you have a chance, you got to do it. You can't waste a chance. This is a good country. And this is the way to change your life. And then, yeah.
Obviously, you've had success and you've won the national title, but there will be times where it's very difficult. And there must be times where you feel, oh, man, I don't want to train today. But is it your family that makes you come in the gym and train hard? Or is it just yourself wanting to be the best you can be?
No, I think it's my family. My coach inspired me a lot because my coach is always coming to the gym 4 o'clock in the morning, and that's what makes me stronger. If my coach can do it every day, I can do it every day. And I always look after my family. I always look to my family, and I want to do it for my family. I want to make my mama proud, my dad proud. I want to make my country proud, and that's what makes me stronger to just keep going. Even I'm not feeling it, even I don't feel like get up and go to the gym, I just do it. You know, that's what champion does. Well, that's what my coach always say. A champion never makes excuses. You gotta come training and discipline yourself. Even if you're feeling really bad, but you have to just go through it. The more you go through it, the more life is still, it will still be hard, but you get, you know, a little bit easier, but you just gotta go through it. You gotta sacrifice a lot. So the more you sacrifice, and then the more you're gonna live a life. So I prefer put in the work now and enjoy life.
Boxing is interesting because it's just you and one other man in the ring. But then at the end of the fight, there's always the respect for your opponent. It's a very special sport for very special people. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Boxing is about respect. And the thing I like about boxing, because when I used to play soccer, it was all used to be blaming me. Now I like boxing. It's all about you. And then, yeah, one person. And I like that sport. That's what I like about boxing. It's just about you. And then, yeah, and a lot of respect.
Certainly is. Well, it's been great catching up with you, and I wish you all the very best, and we'll be following your career with great interest.
Oh, thanks a lot for coming. Appreciate it.
I'm Azuma Nelson, and you are listening to Not the Footy Show.
Very appropriate, John. One African boxer to another African boxer.
Well, let's hope he has half the career Azuma Nelson had.
Well, let's hope so too. I was emceeing an event last Saturday down at Baldivis. It was a North versus South amateur boxing competition, and I have to say the North of the River won. Really good idea that they put together by the Fight Fighting Complex, and hopefully it'll be something that'll be contested for many years to come. But Furcado fought there. He won his bout, and he was just superb. I mean, he's had, I think, just 10 bouts. The guy he was up against had had around 50. And he managed to defeat him. And I just think he's a very focused young man, and boxing's suddenly given him that focus in his life. And as you can see or hear in that interview, he's very much about trying to be successful for his family, to give them a better life. And he sees boxing, as we've heard so many times before from various athletes over the years, that that's the pathway they try to do. But also I think it's given him self-esteem, and it's also taught him that if you work hard, if you dedicate yourself, you can have success. And he's getting recognition now. And imagine, you know, if he could go to the Olympics. He says he wants to be the first Ethiopian Australian to win a gold medal at the Olympics. And what a dream to have, and what a goal to set yourself.
Oh, and tell you what, his English is pretty good. I know a few people who've been living here all their lives that struggle a little bit more than that. He's obviously an outstanding young man.
Oh, look, I think, you know, he's another individual that proves that necessarily you don't need an academic education to be a very special person. And okay, we wish him luck as he's trying to improve his reading and his writing at the moment. But I think he's a very special individual. And I think if he can continue along the path with the guidance of Carlo Callaghan and Dan Rogers, he has the potential to become a great Australian sporting athlete.
And I think too often, with a lot of these immigrants coming from Africa, we don't realise how fragile they actually are, and that a lot of the time they're still in fear, and they come to a new place, and there's still a lot of fear and apprehension involved when they get here, and when we're trying to deal with them. And you know, we've probably got to just bear that in mind at sometimes when we're dealing with people.
But I think it's not just African refugees. Some of them have come from other war-torn parts of the world, and they will have seen things, John, that I hope you and I never have to see in our lives. And again, there's that trust issue. They don't know, because where they've come from, you just don't know who you can trust.
It's interesting you mentioned that during the Yugoslav war, we had a lot of refugees end up down at the Lewin Barracks here in Perth, the old naval barracks.
Yep.
And those people are now living in the community. Every now and then you'll come across someone somewhere. Where are you from? Blah, blah. How'd you get here? Oh, yeah. Oh, you stayed down. Oh, I remember when you came to our country. And, you know, I hate to use the word integrated, because it's, but they are essentially Australian.
And look, I think a lot of them, or most of them, will tell you that they are so grateful for the country for taking them in, and they want to contribute back and give back to the community and the nation. And I think, you know, they're probably far better citizens than I am.
And I tell you what, if there's one mob of people in this country that are absolutely stoked with African immigration to Australia at the moment, it would be Athletics Australia. They should be down at the wharf with every boat of Africans that comes in, just scouting them out, because it's been a long time since we've had someone do well at long distance running, isn't it?
It's been a while.
Running at all. Any sort of running. No, it's poor old Sally Pearson. She had to pull out of the
Well, just quickly,
games.
I mean, she knew 2 days out. Was that the right thing, to sit on that for 2 days before making the announcement? I totally understand why it was done, but... I mean, the thing that amazed me was the Australian press got really upset when the BBC asked that question, when he said, when did you know? She said, 2 days out from the games. Why didn't you say it before? And she sort of was not happy with that question. And a lot of the Australian media said they felt it was an unreasonable question. To me, I think it was a very fair question.
What was unreasonable about it?
Yeah, I mean, come on.
I mean, it plays it, because there was a little bit of chatter when Mark Knowles was chosen as the flag bearer. And people go, what about Sally Pearson? And that, what about Sally Pearson?
Yeah, Mark Knowles is a Queenslander too.
Yeah, been to a few Olympics, just quietly. Won a gold medal as well.
He's won everything there is to win in the game.
Yeah, and guess what? As it turns out, he was going to be competing there as well. Maybe that had something to do with it.
I think it may have had a lot more to do with it than we'll ever know.
Yeah.
My topic.
That leads you on to, in a way, roundabout, longish way.
Well, it does indeed, John. Now I'm going to sort of go a little bit long-winded at my topic. So there's been a lot of criticism over the years as to why boxing has lost its flavour. Into, you know, the world professional game. And the reason is because nowadays there are 17 titles up for grabs, and there are 5 boxing world bodies. Now, 4 of those are the ones that most fans recognise as being legitimate world titles, being the WBA, WBC, IBF and WBO. The IBO is one that's kind of not really taken as seriously as those others. Now, what it means is, so you've got 5 world boxing bodies, 17 world titles. That means at the moment...
Across the 5 boxing.
Yeah.
So they all have one.
Yeah. Okay. So that means there are 85 world champions, which is ridiculous.
Yes.
And that's why people have sort of said that, you know, it's gone crazy now. It all sort of changed in the 1960s when the 2 main commissions basically evolved into the WBA and the WBC, and they were the original 2 sanctioning bodies. Now, if you go back to 1920s, there were actually only 1 body, and there were 12 titles up for grabs, not the 17 we have now. And in fact, if you go before the 1920s, the mid-20s, there were only 7 or 8 world titles that you could win. And I think that's what it kind of needs to. Now, why am I going with this? I'm now going into swimming, because...
Okay.
To me, I just think swimming is getting to the same point. I think it's getting ridiculous, the amount of medals that we've got now at the Olympic Games and in the Commonwealth Games. Like, can you believe, John, that there are more medals up for grabs at the Commonwealth Games for swimming than there are at the Olympic Games? There were 37, or there will be 37 medal events for swimming at the Tokyo Olympics. There were 41 at the Commonwealth Games. And I'm taking out the 6 para events that were in the men and the 6 para events that were in the women, because let's not forget we have the Paralympics, and that's where those events will go to.
Enough.
So I've taken those out. So if you put those in, that's another 12 medals that were in just swimming. I'm not touching diving. I'm not touching
water polo,
synchronized swimming, water polo. Just the swimming events. So at the Olympics, there will be 18 male swimming events, 18 female, and 1 mixed event, which will be interesting, the 4x100 medley relay. And there'll be also 8 diving events, 2 synchronized swimming events, and 2 water polo. Now, at the Commonwealth Games, we had 22 men's medal events and 19 women's medal events. And then, of course, on top of that, you've got the diving that is now taking place at the moment. Now, if we go back to 1960, you know, when Dawn Fraser was around in that, do you know how many events there were for medals there?
10?
There were 8 for the men and 7 for the women.
No, 1,500 metres for the women.
No, there's 7 events. No, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, if you look at that, 8 and 7, and now we're looking at 18 and 18 for both. And I just think it's getting a little bit crazy. And if we put
at
it in...
At a time when the Olympic movement's talking about slimming itself down, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you look at the way things are as we're recording this show, so at the moment when we woke up this morning, Australia had 154 medals in the game so far. And they're recording 73 of those medals came from swimming. That's 47% of Australia's medals have come from pretty much one event. I just think, and I hate to say it, you're watering down the credibility of it. Like, to me, there's just too many. I think they need to trim it right back and just have some real blue ribbon events. Sure, have your world championships and have 18 events at the world championships. But at the Olympics, as you said, they're trying to say they don't want hockey because they give too many medals away. You're giving away 147 medals in swimming.
Yeah, well, see, I don't count, because the bean counters love if you win a hockey gold medal, oh, that's 11 or 14 or how many. But I only see that as one gold medal.
Yeah, so do I. And I mean, when I say the 147, I'm only counting it as one because I'm not going the relay where there's 4 people getting medals. And, of course, if you've done the heats, you get a medal as well. So there's an extra one thrown in there.
It's winning the event is the single gold medal.
Yeah,
even
that's how I've been judging
this. 6 people
might
get it, but it's one gold medal.
But I just think I don't know, am I alone in this? Because to me, boxing lost its credibility because there were too many people holding world championships. And I just think now that swimming is losing, in my opinion, a lot of its credibility because every second or third person, I mean, if you look, Australia's team, I think, is just under 400 athletes here. So we're saying at the moment that 73 of those, so almost a quarter of the team, have won a medal for swimming.
Yeah, I mean, the Olympics is going to go through, and the Commonwealth Games is going to have to go through a major restructure in the next 2 to 3 games. What goes on at Tokyo won't be the same games you see go on at 2028, for example. There'll be huge changes. We're seeing that already with some of the sports that they're including, even though, yes, they're only exhibition sports, but every now and then an exhibition sport has a habit of creeping into the Olympic Games. And that's what they trial them for too. Sometimes these sports are it's not an exhibition, it's a trial.
But you know what I'd like to say? I don't know if you know, I wrote a piece on the blog, notthefootyshow.com, where I was saying I would like to see the Olympics go back to the traditional sports. Now, the sports that have been in it for over 100 years. So literally the Summer Olympics are just those. So we're going back to mainly the athletics, boxing, hockey would be there. You know, just the ones that have literally been there for all that time. And then within that other period, so maybe if the Commonwealth Games fades away, you could have in that second 2-year window when the Winter Olympics are, you could have your new sports. So, you know, your
extreme
rock climbing
Olympics
that's come in,
stuff.
Your taekwondo, all of these. But it's still an Olympics, but it makes it then they're having it every 2 years for a sort of Summer Olympics. But it's the traditional games are kept in one so that becomes a little bit more sacrosanct, and that is the one. But it's still an Olympic Games. But I just feel at the moment, where are we going with it? And it's, you know, I know they say they are appealing to the younger generation, and I'm an old fuddy-duddy because I like athletics and I like all the old sports that I grew up with. But I just sort of wonder what they're doing to what was essentially the Olympics years ago.
I think for a lot of sports, the Olympic Games are important for, say, athletics, because it's the primary event. It is the number one event on their calendar. And for other sports, it's not. Unless the Olympic Games is your number one event on the calendar, you should not be there. And that goes for golf and tennis.
They're the sports that I'm saying you move into that second tier.
Well, I don't even think they need to be involved in the Olympic movement. Does golf...
But the Olympic movement needs them for the money.
Oh, well, see, I think that's a furphy too.
Well, that's what they say, you know.
I think that's an absolute furphy. I don't think the Olympic movement gains anything by having golf or football or a lot of other sports that are just jumping on the bandwagon. Now, rugby, you could make an argument that it's a sport that deserves inclusion on a historical basis, but is it really going to be the primary competition for that sport? Hockey, it still remains as the primary number one. Now, if they change hockey at the Olympics from an 11-a-side to a fives or something like that, it will no longer be the primary medal or primary goal of anybody playing that game to play it at the Olympics. So, get rid of it.
I agree with you, especially with golf, tennis, and even football. Though football's a very strange one, because if you
look at...
It's
an under-23 competition. Yeah, yeah. What the hell's it doing?
But the women's isn't, you see. So the women's is a full team. Now, that's what I was about to say. Is the women's competition actually has a lot of kudos and is actually taken over from the men's. So the women's football at the Olympics is very much like hockey. It's like you've got the World Cup.
But the World Cup is still the primary...
Pardon?
The World Cup is still
Still the prime, but then it's World Cup and the Olympics is pretty close to it. But the men's, as you say, like a lot of nations don't even put in an under 23 team or don't even go through the qualifying for it because they know that the clubs in their country aren't going to release the players or whatever. Yeah. So
they have to thin down. The Olympics definitely has to thin down, but I think it's got to thin down in a way that means that sports aren't going to be left high and dry. So that's why it should come back to what's your primary number one top ranked event. And if it's a World Cup, as it is for football or rugby union or other sports, then that's what you go. If golf, it's the Four Masters. Name me the last three golf gold medal winners.
I couldn't.
Yeah. Couldn't name one, could you?
And I don't think I've actually watched it.
Tennis? Andy Murray, only because they made such a big deal about it at London.
Yeah, and didn't Federer win in...
He might have won last Rio? One. Yeah, okay. Maybe, I don't know. Yeah. See, I mean, they're not... No one really cares. The tennis players might. Yeah, good, another competition, I can win something else.
Well, I know that Steffi Graf's the only player, isn't she, to have won the Olympic and the Grand Slam. So she did the Grand Slam and the Olympic gold in the same year.
Yeah. And that...
No one's done that.
Hopefully no one will, because it'll be out of the Olympics. Tennis does all right without the Olympics. It should be the forum for sports that need the Olympics.
And just quickly on tennis before we wrap up, have you seen that they're bringing in this 20-second rule for serving?
Oh, yeah,
so that they've got to serve within 20 seconds, or initially you get a warning, then you lose a point, then you lose a game. Which I think is, you know who's driving that, this is the TV stations.
Yeah, of course.
Because tennis tends to go over time. But
I mean, organisers will be happy with it too, because tournament organisers are always getting caught out with weather issues, so they want the whole thing to speed up as well.
I actually think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, how long do you need?
Yeah, maybe they should do the same with cricket as to how long they can take between overs.
Oh, that's an interesting call. Or between balls. I mean, essentially they do have a time limit, but they don't hold...
This is the problem. When was the last time a team actually bowled its acquired overs within a day? It's very rare these days that it happens.
And it shouldn't be that hard.
It's dead easy.
Yeah.
When you play at the level that, you know, here at state level or whatever, and you're playing a 60-over game, you run between wickets because you know you're never going to get the overs in. It's going to get dark and you're going to be batting when it's dark. So that's why you do it. So if it can be done at the sort of grassroots or the amateur level or the semi-professional level, there's no reason why the top guys can't do it.
Well, they should have more. They bowl that much quicker, don't they? Don't have that much time between when the ball leaves the hand to hit.
Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't go to the boundary as often. And you've got to look for it in the hedges.
Yeah, that's it. Well.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed it. Until
what about
next
hockey?
Time.
Just quickly.
Oh, you want to go on to something?
Just quickly, Hockey Australia is having a meeting today, we're led to believe, by Hockey Australia.
At the time we're recording.
Yeah, to decide upon the future of the Australian Hockey League. They claim they haven't made a decision yet. They'll be doing that this morning. They've made their decision. They know exactly what they're going to do. Hockey public's not going to be happy. If you don't like it, ring them up, tell them you don't like it, and don't support it. And it's the only way they're going to get the message across is it not getting any support from hockey people, unfortunately. And it's going to be a terrible decision for the future of the game.
I agree with you on that last point. I think it's going to be a decision that sadly those who've made it won't be around when the ramifications of it actually come home.
No, the revolution that hockey needs is not on the field, it's in our boardrooms and administrations.
Some people are on the pitch, they think it's all over. It's in
foul. See ya, we'll be back next week.
G'day, it's Gary Shannon with great news. The people who brought all the good times and fun at Gobbles, Bracket Club, the Post Office, Beethoven's, Pinocchio's and more are back. Introducing Late Night Legends. Join DJs Les Cook and Crazy Craig, plus other legends this Saturday night. Fire up and let the good times roll. I might even pop in and have a couple myself. Late Night Legends, this Saturday, 7 p.m. till late, at Paddy Maguire's, Barker Road, Subiaco. Tell them Gaz sent you.